This paid program may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. All across America, small towns and large cities are facing the social realities of homelessness and the steady increase in demand for homeless services. Sadly, our country's veterans are far more likely than most Americans to experience homelessness, in part because of their high rates of post-traumatic stress disorder, physical injuries and disabilities, and many other factors. While providing shelter and services to those most in need is critical, the national conversation is shifting from managing to ending homelessness, especially chronic homelessness among veterans. Several years ago, the federal government made a commitment to prevent and end veteran homelessness by 2015. To make this goal a reality would require the breaking down of institutional silos and increasing collaboration amongst federal agencies. In an effort to do just that and confront a seemingly intractable issue, two federal departments, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs and the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, have joined together to strategically align their resources and coordinate efforts to end veterans' homelessness. How are VA and HUD working together to end homelessness among veterans? What does it mean to pursue a housing-first approach to ending veteran homelessness? And how are VA and HUD raising awareness about available programs for those most at risk? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guests. Susan Angel, Executive Director of the Veterans Homelessness Initiative at the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs, and Mark Johnston, Acting Assistant Secretary, the Office of Community Planning and Development within the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Hello, Susan. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Hello, Mark. Welcome. It's great to have you.
Thank you.
So, Susan and Mark, before we delve into specific components and programs that comprise your collective efforts, I would like to set some context. Ending homelessness among veterans is a top priority for the White House, HUD, and VA. This commitment is reflected in the nation's first comprehensive plan to prevent and end homelessness, Open Doors. First, would you tell us more about the vision outlined in this plan and how your efforts build on its foundation? And second, in order to improve outcomes for America's veterans experiencing or at risk for homelessness, the Open Door Plan concentrates on specific actions in five key areas. What are those areas?
Well, let me give just some brief context here, and that is for years, the federal government has been trying to confront homelessness. But this is the first time that we've ever actually had a strategic plan to end it. In the past, we've tried to manage it, we've tried to address it, but we've never been committed to actually ending homelessness. And so the 19 agencies that make up the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness, which have great leadership from the VA and HUD, and other agencies are very involved as well, really got their arms around the fact that there are various subpopulations of the homeless that we need to focus on if we're going to strategically end this problem. So the goals include ending chronic homelessness, that's persons living on the streets or in shelters for long periods of time who are disabled. There's ending veteran homelessness, ending family and children homelessness. And then the last goal was simply, not even frankly that simply, but to help set the path for ending all other forms of homelessness. So there are some folks that don't fit into those categories, such as single individuals that don't have a disability. But our primary focus is chronic homelessness, veteran homelessness, and family and youth homelessness.
Susan, what about your perspective?
We share both VA and HUD an agency priority goal through the White House Office of Management and Budget, and this goal aligns our objective of ending veteran homelessness as it's outlined in Opening Doors. The VA plan specifically, the six key areas that we address are outreach, treatment, prevention, housing, income, and very importantly, community partnerships.
Right. So, Mark, as a follow-up, what does it mean to pursue a housing-first approach to ending veteran homelessness? What evidence supports that this is the best approach or the most effective approach?
Well, the concept of housing-first came about from an outreach worker in New York City named Sam Sembaris, who was, when he was engaging homeless persons and was trying to help stabilize them so they could move into, for instance, emergency shelter, kept getting these responses that, I don't want to go to shelter. I don't want to get stabilized. I want a house. And so he changed his thinking and therefore his program in terms of what he was going to do. And the concept of housing first is really get people housed first and then focus on everything else. Because once you're housed, one of our most basic needs in life, then you can start focusing on the other issues around you, such as perhaps your drug abuse or mental health issues. So at first, many groups were skeptical of this approach. Even HUD was concerned. And so we did a national study to get a sense of how well it did work. And we were quite impressed with the results that, in fact, about 84% of all chronically homeless persons, that's persons living on the streets with a mental illness, were still housed a year after they got placed immediately into their own apartments. And so we really have been touting that with the VA for 4 years now, that this really is the solution for people that need long-term permanent housing.
Great. So, Susan, I want to understand the population, the veteran homeless population, because they have characteristics that are distinct from non-veteran homeless populations. What are some of the characteristics of an at-risk veteran?
Homeless veterans are typically males between the ages of 31 and 61, and they have many risk factors for homelessness. First, poverty, lack of good health and support services, unemployment, a lack of access to affordable housing. They might have disabling psychological conditions like post-traumatic stress, traumatic brain injury, domestic violence, military sexual trauma, drug and alcohol issues, physical and mental illness, past history of incarceration, a difficult transition from active duty service. But of all of the risk factors that I've mentioned, poverty is the number one risk factor. Another unique factor for veterans, they are usually entering the homeless service provision area by themselves. They don't come with families or partners. They are by themselves. So quite a bit of isolation.
So you folks needed, Mark, you needed to understand the scope and dimension of this population to really align your resources and your programs to target them and to solve this issue. How did the annual Veterans Homelessness Assessment Report factor into your efforts to better align your resources to address this issue?
For years, HUD had limited data on homelessness, and it was hard to get a handle on how to solve the problem without having good data. So we started collecting data in 2005 in a very systematic way, where each community was required to give us different kinds of information. One of it was point-in-time information, where every city in January collects information on how many homeless persons they have, with some breakouts such as how many are single, how many are families, etc. So we also realized that over time, homelessness looks quite different. Mm-hmm. So at a point in time, we have about 636,000 people who are homeless on any given day. But over the course of a year, we find that there's about 2 million homeless people. So it's a population that moves in and out quite a bit. So we collect the data in both those different ways. So our report to Congress looks at point in time as well as longitudinal data to get those two different looks at it. We realized several years ago, as we were committing with the VA to end veteran homelessness, we need to have some specific focus on that. So we have a supplemental report just on homeless veterans that HUD and VA jointly submit to the Congress. And it's from that report that we know things like today we have about 62,000 homeless veterans. We know that of all adults, about 13% are veterans. And we also know that in the last 2 years, we've been able to reduce veteran homelessness by about 18%.
So, Susan, Given your efforts, how critical has it been to break down the institutional silos that existed beforehand that allowed you folks to collaborate, you and HUD and VA and HUD? And how are you employing sort of a shared leadership concept?
Well, breaking down the silos within government is critically important and I think is really the foundation of our success. We have a shared leadership that's very important to both of our organizations. It's so important that both of our secretaries, Secretary Shinseki and Secretary Donovan, have agreed to form a two-year leadership team for the United States Interagency Council on Homelessness. And this facilitates long-term planning and goal setting for the 19 members of this agency. So this is the first time this has happened, and it really shows how closely we are working together, and there isn't a silo between VA and HUD. We also support the shared leadership by reviewing data together. We develop joint interventions in communities that are struggling. We team up for opportunities like this so we can jointly get the message out to people that government is working together as a team to solve a very critical social problem in our country. We do things like joint briefings to Congress. Mm-hmm. Everything we can do together, we do it.
How are VA and HUD working together to end veterans' homelessness? I will ask Susan Angel from VA and Mark Johnston from HUD when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. Is there a recipe for successful cross-agency collaborations that are enduring? Or is each initiative so dependent on context and personality that there's no way to offer general principles of success? Well, an IBM Center report by Dr. Jane Fountain, Implementing Cross-Agency Collaborations, a Guide for Federal Managers, offers advice on successful cross-agency relationships. Fountain says there's, in fact, a recipe for success, but it depends on the number of factors. Go to businessofgovernment.org, download Jane Fountain's report, and find out. That's businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and my guests today are Mark Johnston, Acting Assistant Secretary, Community Planning and Development within the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, and Susan Angel, Executive Director of the Veterans Homelessness Initiative within the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Mark and Susan, your department's commitment working together to reduce homelessness among veterans is longstanding. Your partnership provides homeless veterans with housing resources through three primary programs. I'd like to explore one particular program, the HUD Veterans Affairs Supportive Housing Program. Would you tell us more about the core components of this program and how it actually works? And perhaps you could illustrate the services that are provided under it.
As a young staffer over 20 years ago, I had the opportunity to work with the VA and my partners at HUD to help create the HUD VA Supportive Housing Program. And it is a wonderful, unique program across, I think, all of government in that this is the only instance I know of where two federal agencies jointly administer a single program. So we use our expertise of knowing how to provide rental assistance, and we rely on the VA for a lot in terms of providing outreach to the veterans, clinical services. So we do the housing and VA does the services. And we've proven that it works really, really well, especially for people living on the streets and have been homeless for a very long period of time. So the Congress, who we jointly developed this with many years ago, has given us a lot of flexibility on how to use it and have given us support each and every year. Even through these tough, tough budget times, we continue to get an appropriation for that particular program.
Susan, you wanted to add anything to that?
I really do. The HUD-VASH program has probably been one of our most effective ways to end veteran homelessness. It really is the housing part of ending homelessness that VA does not have the authority to provide. So this partnership makes it possible. We currently have about 48,000 vouchers to use. And because of our joint efforts, we have housed 41,000 veterans in these HUD-VASH units. At this point in time, we're targeting our HUD-VASH resources to our most chronically, most in-need veterans. It's also a great asset for us for those homeless veterans that may not quite fit in transitional housing or other programs like single parents with kids. It's a great option for single parents with kids.
So, Mark, this program, like many of your other programs, are always being enhanced. And I'd like to understand, what have you done to improve operations for this particular program? And perhaps you could share some of those lessons you've learned.
The strong partnership that we've been really developing in the last 4 years really has enhanced our ability between HUD and VA to administer this program. And it's helped in a couple of different ways. It's helped us streamline it so that we're able to house veterans much more quickly than we were before. It also helps us address challenges that we come up with or that communities come up with during the course of the operation of the program. So as I reflect on some of the examples, one would be that we've been able to implement the Housing First concept in HUD-VASH with incredible partnership from the VA, who's really launched forward on making that happen. We're also able to target to particular communities that have the highest need in terms of the most veterans. And frankly, we're also looking at not even the most veterans, but the most veterans living actually on the streets versus in emergency shelters. We also are looking to and do reward communities that lease up quickly in terms of renting up the units very quickly to veterans. So these are all innovations and developments that have occurred just in the last couple of years because of the partnership.
Yeah, you had mentioned, Susan, data sharing, data gathering. And I want to talk, Mark, about the success of your efforts is really attributable to data collection innovations and analysis of data. So you target your resources better to a specific population. How does the HUDstat program as a tool and an innovation factor into your efforts? And perhaps you could show us a little bit about, tell us a little bit about how it works.
The secretary for HUD is Secretary Donovan, who used to be the director of housing for the city of New York. And he used the model of CityStat when he was in New York City and brought that to HUD. So we call it HUDstat. And it really allows us across various offices within HUD to engage with a whole bunch of different performance data so we can really focus on solving problems. So this isn't just the part of HUD that I work on, but various parts, the general counsel's office, the research office, other areas that provide other kinds of housing resources to poor people that we could also use to help homeless veterans. And so these HUDstat meetings normally involve a bunch of different folks from HUD, from headquarters and field, but for veteran homelessness, we actually have the VA at our side. So the Secretary of HUD and the Deputy Secretary of the VA jointly lead the HUDstat meetings on ending veteran homelessness. And that's where we get into these sessions about what's working well. And I remember after our very first one, I was talking to my secretary the day after. We were at a National Homeless Veterans Conference. And I said, well, didn't you think that went well? And he said, you know, I don't want to see a dog and pony show again. I want to see actual problems that you can't solve that we need to get together at a higher level to do. And that's what they've been ever since. So we tee up tough issues that we're grappling with, that we need some guidance on, and then move forward.
So how does it identify bottlenecks? And are there was issues where there's some success stories on how HUDstat was able to improve the performance of Los Angeles and Jacksonville. Could you tell us a little bit about those?
Sure. Part of the way that we solve this problem is making sure we're not just thinking within the Beltway in terms of just headquarters perspective. So all of these HUDstats, especially the one on ending veteran homelessness, includes field offices and other communities. So we have had Los Angeles, for instance, on the calls where it's the HUD team in L.A., it's the VA team in L.A. And so our secretary can directly ask the local caseworker in L.A., what's the particular issue you're seeing that we're hearing about? And so it's having these very candid conversations across the country in a live situation that quickly identifies what are the situations we need to be fixing.
So you folks are leading a team, but you can't do this all by yourself. This is a very important effort. What are you doing, in a sense, to help the local folks who are delivering services, sort of boot camps? What are boot camps and how are you helping them understand and transcend some of the bureaucracy they have to deal with?
Well, we have these wonderful events called Rapid Results Boot Camps, and they are supported by Community Solutions and the Rapid Results Institute. So these are external folks that come in, and we bring HUD staff, VA staff, public housing staff, our veterans benefit staff, whoever has a piece in the process to solve this problem, they come together as a team, and for 2.5 days, they work as a team. They look at their process. They look at where there's duplication. They look at where there's gaps. The goal, really, of the boot camp is for the team to set audacious 100-day goals that they commit to as a team. They go back to their sites, wherever that may be, and there are follow-up calls. How are you doing? Here was your commitment. Did you make it? Do you need help? They share their progress with the leaders every 30 days until we get to that 100-day point. Mm-hmm. And at the 100-day point, we hear, did you make your goal or did you not make your goal? We're finding the competitiveness between different regions to make their goal is very helpful. It's very exciting. It makes it fun for the teams. And we're finding that they are doing things like housing 100 veterans in 100 days, cutting a process that took, maybe 200 days. They're able to cut that processing time in half. And after they've completed one 100 day, they're excited, motivated, and feel very proud and capable to have another 100-day audacious goal. So this has just been a tool that I think we all are very proud of and proud of the teams that take it on, do the hard work, and then report back to us and use us as resources if they run into any bumps.
That sounds great. Mark, did you?
Well, I totally agree. This is an example where we as the federal government realized we couldn't do this all ourselves by any means. And so we had these two groups, Community Solutions and Rapid Results Institute, approach us and say, look, we think we could help. And rather than be defensive, we completely embraced it. And we now help fund these around the country. So one of the reasons that L.A. is moving forward so well is we've held a boot camp out there. We've been there, both of us, to the boot camp to really help move things forward. We were just in Florida this week. Now, because of sequester, I could stay for just a day. Susan stayed on another day, so we couldn't actually stay for the whole time. But it was important, we felt, to make sure that federal leadership was there so that folks on the ground who know we have this national goal to end veteran homelessness realize it's actually real.
I'd like to explore complementary programs, specifically around prevention. As they say, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Mark, what can you tell us about some of the programs you're doing around prevention?
Well, we ran a Recovery Act program called Homelessness Prevention Rapid Rehousing Program, and I'll just use that acronym, HPRP, where we were able to serve about 1.3 million people over the course of 3 years, which was a huge program to stand up. It was $1.5 billion. And we learned a lot of lessons. And I think the two most important lessons that I learned from this was twofold. First of all, and you heard from that name, it's kind of long. It's two concepts. It's homelessness prevention and rapid rehousing. Rapid rehousing simply means if somebody becomes homeless, let's rapidly rehouse them back into an apartment. We can pay the rent for a little while. We can pay the utilities for a little while. We can even help with some case management for a little while. And we let the communities decide how long that's going to be. It might be 3 or 4 months. It might be a year. And what we found was that most homeless people that we helped needed a very small amount of investment to solve their homeless problem. So much so, in fact, that after a year, 90% of all the families assisted that we've seen across the country were still housed. And the cost was only about $1,200 per person. So that was a huge aha moment for HUD, and I think for the VA as well, is that we don't have to have a really expensive intervention for every homeless person. We need to have dosages of interventions where if you're living on the streets for years, you're probably going to need permanent housing and a lot of services for some time to come. But for most homeless people, they will not need nearly that much intervention. The second important lesson, and one that was kind of surprising for me, was the communities did spend a lot of money on homelessness prevention, but some cities, including New York, looked and saw what the actual impact was. And what they realized was that it's really tough to know who actually is going to become homeless tomorrow. Just because you get evicted from your housing, just because you lose your job, does not mean you'll automatically become homeless. In fact, in most cases, the vast majority of cases, you don't. So the lessons learned for us were rapid rehousing is an incredibly cost-effective and efficient intervention. And prevention is something we don't want to use targeted homeless dollars for. We can see bigger mainstream programs targeting that a lot more. That's their role as mainstream welfare programs. So going forward with our existing programs, we're really encouraging communities to use our limited, very limited resources for rapid rehousing and less so for homelessness prevention.
Mm-hmm. And Susan, I'd like to follow up and learn more about a VA program, the Supportive Services for Veteran Families program. Could you tell us a little bit about that? And to what extent has it been modeled on the prevention and rapid rehousing program?
It is absolutely modeled after the HBRP program from HUD. And that's really one of the gifts of the partnership, is they already stood up a similar program. There were lessons learned. There were things that they learned that they could show us so we could avoid the same mistakes. We could really stand this program up very, very quickly, which we did. It has been immensely successful. In our first year of operation, we had hoped to serve about 22,000 participants for $60 million. And in fact, we served over 35,000 participants, and 8,800 of those were children. It's our first program where we can actually serve our veteran and their family. And it is probably one of the most progressive, cost-effective, flexible programs that we have to help folks that are on the verge of homelessness or get them rapidly rehoused, as HBRP did, so that they don't remain in that state for very long. The paradigm shift here for us, we don't reach a veteran and say, we have three programs that you can pick from. Pick one and let's end your homelessness. We reach out to the veteran and say, what is it you need? You know, maybe you just need some job assistance. Maybe you just need a little help with rent for a few weeks. Maybe you need employment assistance. Maybe you need childcare assistance. So each intervention is based only on what that veteran and their family needs, much like Mark said about the dosage, making the dosage appropriate, the right intervention for the right time for the right person. So we are very excited about this program. We now have $100 million out across the nation, and we're serving in 151 communities, and starting the very end of this year, beginning of next year, we will have $300 million out to communities across the country. I think the other important piece of this is all executed by community providers. We give community providers, they compete for the money through a grant process. They get the money, and then they take care of our veterans. They have done a phenomenal job.
And so can I just ask a follow-up? Because when you do tailor your response, your intervention to the needs of the specific individual and their families, it really rests on case management and having a vigorous case management process in place. Is that correct? I mean,
It absolutely does. It's the case management, and the community provider needs to be able to access mainstream resources from other agencies. So it's not just VA and HUD that are solving the problem, but HHS is involved. Mm-hmm. Department of Labor is involved. All the partners are involved in the community. And we have seen an enormous amount of mainstream resources now serving our veterans and their families prior to when we had this SSVF program.
So, Susan, are there any other programs that you employ to help you reach your ultimate goal?
Yes. In VA, we certainly have a full range of health care and mental health care that we provide for our veterans. We have robust substance abuse programs, PTSD, traumatic brain injury. We have a justice outreach program. Mm-hmm. We reach out to folks that are coming out of the prison system to try to get them, you know, taken care of in a smooth pathway, because that's a group that's very likely to become homeless when they get out of prison or jail. What's exciting, we have these new mobile medical outreach teams that are actually going out into the community on the street, and they're able to provide primary care right there where the veteran is. It's a way to engage the most chronically homeless. They're getting their health care needs, and our ultimate goal really is to engage them and get these folks that are on the street, that we're treating on the street, engaged into a program that will get them some safe housing. In our first year, we only have a few of these teams out. In those communities where they're operating, we have noticed a significant decline in their emergency department visits and in their hospitalizations, because these teams are going out, taking care of them, and getting them hooked up with the resources they need.
Right. Mark, do you have any other programs you wanted to talk about?
In terms of programs at HUD, HUD-VASH is the only program that's specifically targeted to homeless veterans. We do have other programs, though, that can make and do make a big impact on helping homeless veterans that are not specifically targeted to veterans. One is called the Continuum of Care Program. Mm-hmm. It's our primary grant program. It's about $2 billion competitive, which is to serve all homeless persons. We serve a lot of veterans through that program, however. Back in 2009, we were serving about 4,000, and now it's 12,000 homeless veterans through the program, with a range of interventions, primarily permanent housing. We also now are looking beyond our homeless programs, because if we're going to end homelessness, it can't just be with these existing targeted homeless programs. We've been flat funded for about 4 years now, and so we can't just rely on existing homeless programs to get it done. So we're looking at mainstream programs at HUD, such as the Community Development Block Grant Program, public housing, the Housing Choice Voucher Program, as much bigger resources that even if a small fraction of those dollars can go to homeless persons within a community, we can still make a difference in reducing veteran homelessness.
So, Mark, I'd like to go back to prevention services. I'd like to know more about the Veterans Homeless Prevention Demonstration Program. Would you elaborate on the purpose of this program? What's the status to date?
Sure. This demonstration program is another collaborative where HUD and the VA and the Department of Labor are working together to learn lessons about how we can better prevent homelessness among veterans, especially veterans just returning from the war. So we selected 5 geographically diverse places around the country, different arms of the military, such as Navy, Army, et cetera, and places where we have lots of returning veterans from the war. So I was in Tacoma recently looking at one of our sites, and the status that we're in right now is we're in our third and final year, and we're working on an interim report to look at the findings that we've picked up on so far. And one lesson I learned in going to Tacoma was for the case managers that are actually running the program, that are reaching out to these veterans that are at risk of becoming homeless, if those case managers are veterans, the credibility is so much more impressive. There's a much easier way to get trust from the clients if the case managers that we're using are veterans. So that's one little lesson, but I think it's a powerful one.
I want to follow up, and this is open to both of you. It's more about lessons learned. And, you know, homelessness is a local issue. I've done interviews with folks in New York, Seth Diamond, who prior to Seth, Robert Hess as well. And they are in charge of the Department of Homeless Services. And my question really has to do with, are you folks learning from the experiences and then inculcating that those lessons learned from the experiences of local service delivery folks and making your programs better from what you hear in the field? Is that happening?
You know, from my perspective, that's where we learn most of our lessons, to be frank. I've been to New York City countless times. They're great innovators. I have been through their Rikers jail system to see how they're trying to prevent homelessness from the jail side. Worked with their mental health commissioner to get a sense of how they're connecting on homelessness. They did a number of different studies during the HPRP, this Homelessness Prevention Rapid Rehousing Program, on the clients that we've learned tremendously from. So when we learned that, when I read these reports, we started spreading that word across the country so that we are actively sharing lessons learned every time we learn them. So we both have very active websites that we're sharing information on based on community experience. So yes, I honestly can say most of the lessons we learn are from communities, not from reading some federal report.
And I would agree with that. I think Housing First is a perfect example of where the community showed us this is what needs to happen. This is a very successful way to target and use your resources. And so we picked it up, we used it, and it is working for us as well for our veterans. And I also think our Secretary Shinseki really believes that so much of the creativity is in our communities and the solutions that they have. And that's why we have such a robust SSVF program mm-hmm. that is completely executed in the community by the providers.
That's great. I did want to go back real quick because you had mentioned it, Mark, earlier. And it's around the concept of Housing First. And quickly, when this was first adopted and inculcated into the program and the policy was set, what kind of criticisms did you receive from the folks on the front lines or somewhere else? Were there any, quid pro quo? Why are we giving them stuff? How did you ameliorate that?
I can take that. For VA, Housing First was a tough concept. Mm-hmm. When you think about the folks that are on the street, their health is compromised. They often have substance abuse issues. They're really in a very unhealthy place, and they're very worried. Sometimes they're not really trusting of our organization, and really our clinicians care so much mm-hmm. about the welfare of our veterans. It was hard for them to think about taking someone from the street and putting them into a home by themselves, even though there's case management wrapped around it. It was just very, very hard for our staff because they do feel very protective. But with the demonstration project we had in D.C., what we found in working with the community and case managing together, they were able to house over 100 veterans very quickly using a housing first model. And a year later, over 90% of them were still in their home. And that's one of those areas where you do a few pilots, build up the confidence, let people know this actually works in a pilot in a few sites. They do it. They get the lessons learned under their belt. And now it's all over the country with VA. But it did take some time to change and trust that that was the way to go.
Wonderful story. That's great. Mark?
When I first heard about Housing First, I'm a visual person, and so I wanted to see it. And so I went to New York City to check it out, interviewed clients, interviewed Sam Sombaris, for instance, and really talking to the clients kind of persuaded me. It was just amazing to talk to clients who'd been living in Central Park for years, drugging, prostitution, all sorts of crazy stuff. And when they got the opportunity to leave to go into an apartment, they first of all couldn't believe it. It took them weeks to come around to acknowledging this might actually be truth. And then to go to her apartment, this woman's apartment, and see how highly functional she now is, because now she isn't living in Central Park. She's living in an apartment and she's able to function. And the other benefit is not just for the person. What we've seen through studies, and this is studies from around the country, is that if you don't act, if you don't use Housing First, you let people stay on the streets, it's going to cost your city often $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year per person as they're cycling through these systems of jails, mental hospitals, emergency rooms. So not doing anything costs a lot of money. Doing something that actually solves the person's housing crisis actually can save the city money as well.
And save their lives.
Absolutely.
How are VA and HUD raising awareness about available programs for at-risk veterans? I will ask Susan Angel from VA and Mark Johnston from HUD when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. Pundits warn about the fiscal cliff, but federal agencies nearly every year hold up the budgetary sky while walking on the edge of a cliff. It's called the world of continuing resolutions and potential government shutdowns. The IBM Center report, The Cost of Budgetary Uncertainty, Analyzing the Impact of Late Appropriations by Dr. Phil Joyce, examines the impact of late budgets on the efficiency and effectiveness of government operations. To find out more about the cost of budgetary uncertainty, go to businessofgovernment.org. That's businessofgovernment.org. How do leaders direct ambitious change and achieve significant goals? What strategies do they use to overcome opposition and win allies? And how do specific organizational and political contexts affect strategies and outcomes? These are important age-old questions. To help answer them, the IBM Center has released Forging Governmental Change by Professor Harry Lambright. Lambright has identified two premier government leaders, Dr. Robert Gates of DOD and Dr. Francis Collins of NIH, who have led transformations within their own organizations. By all accounts, both men have been effective leaders of change. This report continues the IBM Center's long interest in leadership and transformation. So go to businessofgovernment.org and download Forging Governmental Change, Lessons from Transformations Led by Robert Gates and Francis Collins. That's businessofgovernment.org. There you can download all Center reports and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and my guests today are Mark Johnston, Acting Assistant Secretary, Community Planning and Development within the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, and Susan Angel, Executive Director of the Veterans Homelessness Initiative within the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. So, Susan, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the veteran population. What are you doing in the area of outreach to at-risk veterans? How are you raising awareness to all the programs you have available to this population?
That's a really good question, because we find that one of the barriers to care is folks just don't understand how much is available to them. For our newest veterans, Sometimes they will leave and not realize they have 5 years of free health care if they served in the war zone. So we have had a campaign effort called Make the Call. Mm-hmm. We have a 24/7 call center for homeless veterans. And we went across the country. Our top leadership hit 28 cities in 2 weeks and did radio, TV, ribbon cuttings, stand downs, all to talk about this call center and make the call. So a veteran can call, a family member, a friend, a community provider, a first responder, anybody who comes in contact with a homeless veteran or someone who's at risk for that can call this number, and they will get a warm handoff to services close to their geographic area. Mm-hmm. The people that are on this call center 24/7, they're professionals. Many of them are veterans themselves, so they really understand what the struggles are, and they really understand sometimes how hard it is to make that first call. Mm-hmm. We're very happy with that. After the campaign, we increased the calls to the call center over 200%. Our first year, we were getting about 10,000 calls a year, and now we're getting 10,000 calls a month. So it's really become a very open door in terms of finding out services that our homeless veterans can take advantage of. VA also has very specific outreach coordinators in each of the medical centers, mm-hmm. whose job it is to go out into the community where veterans are, veteran service organizations, and invite them to come in for care. Probably one of our biggest asset for outreach are our vet centers. Mm-hmm. We have 300 vet centers across the nation, and they're primarily staffed by fellow combat veterans. So the credibility that Mark referred to mm-hmm. earlier, that vet-to-vet contact, makes it so much easier for a fellow veteran to come into a site, understand what the services are, and feel comfortable, welcomed, and respected for the service that they've given our country. These vet centers also have mobile vet centers. These mobile vet centers are these great big bus things, and they're equipped with offices and technology such that they can go out to an event and provide care, provide counseling, get someone eligible and into the VA system of care. They can also take those mobile vet centers and go out into our very rural areas on a regular basis to make sure that not just expecting veterans to come to us, but we're reaching out to veterans and making sure we reach them. The other thing that we do are stand downs. Mm-hmm. We have stand downs across the country, and it's an event, usually once a year, 1 or 2 or 3 days, where the entire community comes together, the VA, the local service provider, social services, whatever a veteran might need, food, shelter, clothing, health screenings, all those things are available at a stand down. And some of our most exciting standouts is when we have veteran courts there. We have a judge that shows up, and veterans that have particular kinds of legal issues that either stop them from getting an ID or keep them from getting a driver's license, whatever that is, right then and there, a judge can adjudicate their situation and just open the door for them to get back into housing and back into a quality of life. Last year, we had 206 stand downs across the country.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Mark, your efforts, as you pointed out earlier, have contributed to about a 12% drop in homelessness among veterans. Is it 12% still?
In 1 year.
In 1 year, year over year. Given all the progress that has been made, getting to zero in 3 years will be tough, no doubt. As your efforts continue and your mission grows more challenging, how are you preparing to meet some of these challenges that you see for the future?
Well, you're certainly right. We have a little less than 3 years to end veteran homelessness, and it is going to be challenging. We have had an 18% reduction in the last 2 years, so it wasn't just progress in one particular year.
Sure.
For the next year's budget, we have just submitted, as of last week, an increased request of 25% of HUD's homeless account, which I don't know that you'll see that anywhere in government, especially in this era. But it's because we show results we can demonstrate outcomes, that we can actually solve homelessness. So we've asked for a nearly $500 million increase in our budget for our regular homeless programs. Many of those dollars will be going to helping veterans. We've also asked for an additional 10,000 vouchers through the HUD-VASH program. And to make sure that we end veteran homelessness, we in the VA are working very hard to make sure that the vast majority of those vouchers are used for the most needy, for the chronically homeless who are living on the streets that have disabilities, and using other resources like the VA's program, Supportive Services for Veteran Families, and HUD's program, Emergency Solutions Grants, for things like rapid rehousing. So in our request to Congress this year for an increased level of funding for our homeless programs, including HUD-VASH, we also said, and for our regular program that would benefit homeless shelters, we want to make sure that $60 million of that is specifically targeted just to rapid rehousing, as opposed to other activities such as prevention, which aren't quite yet proven. So we're trying to be as strategic and directive as we can with the funding that we've got to make sure we can reach this goal.
Susan, what about on the VA side?
Well, on the VA side, we actually came to a mutual decision that using those very precious HUD-VASH vouchers for our most needy is probably one of the strongest ways we're going to end homelessness, because that is going to be our hardest population. And it comes with the kinds of care and support services to keep someone in the housing once we get them there. The increase in the SSVF, that's huge. That really is taking our assets and using them for, if you will, some bridge assistance. As I said, it's economical, it's flexible, it's very easy for our veterans to use that, and we intend to keep up that funding for that program as we go down the road.
Susan, I wanted to follow up. Do you anticipate needs increasing given the end of the Iraq War and the complete drawdown in Afghanistan? And in what ways are you addressing the changing environment?
We're really keeping an eye on our what we would call our OAF, OEF, OND, and that's our Operation Iraqi Freedom, Enduring Freedom, and New Dawn population. The SSVF program is probably the program for this group because they haven't been out long enough where they are chronically homeless, and they just may have significant employment issues. We know that the unemployment rate for this population is one of the highest. Mm-hmm. So we're really working with Department of Defense to make sure we have good transitions. We're working with Department of Labor to make sure that there are job assistance services out there. The secretary was able to get tremendous programs for the post 9/11 GI education bill. So we have so much education that's available to this population as they're coming out. I also said they had 5 years if they were served in the combat zone for health care. Right now, that population only constitutes about 5.5% of our homeless population. So I think here's where we can be more supportive and not even have them be vulnerable to be homeless. But if they are, we certainly have the services to take care of them. In our SSVF program, 15% of the veterans using that program are OEF, OAF, OND veterans.
So, Mark, I'd like to talk more about how you're leveraging innovation and advances in technology to make a difference and achieve your goals.
There are a lot of different things that we're both doing. Let me just mention one from the HUD side. We have developed a tool for communities so they can look at the data they have from our point-in-time counts, from the annual homeless assessment report, and other data, so they can make informed decisions on how to reallocate or restructure their homeless system. Many communities have a system that was in place 15 years ago but really hasn't changed much, and it's really time to do that. With limited dollars, we've got to restructure. We've got to reallocate and redirect in many, many communities. And so we've got a tool now for them online that they can use to really do that.
Great. Susan?
Well, we have a couple of areas where we're using technology. We have right now a homeless registry, and our homeless registry goes back several years where we can actually identify and track every single veteran who's come to the VA for any kind of homeless care. And we can see how they move across the country. We can see the kinds of services they need, what works, what doesn't work. So that's been incredibly helpful to us. This last point in time count, we had a very modest test of an application. Instead of using paper and pencil, we had smartphones and we had tablets that we made available to a few folks across the country to see if we could assist the staff with making that point in time count a little bit easier and the data collection a little bit faster. But the thing that we most recently advertised is we partnered up with Bon Jovi, and he sponsored a app competition that resulted in an effort called Project Reach. And this is an application that can go on a smartphone and anybody can download it, and it will tell you in New Jersey what services are available. If it has an icon like food, you can push food and it'll tell you where you can go get food. If there's a bed, you can push the icon that has a bed. It'll tell you what shelter has capacity. So both a provider, a community member, and a veteran family member can go onto this, use this app, and find out what resources they need. They give the location, they give the times of operation and what's available. So it's those kinds of things we really look forward to using as we go down this journey to end veteran homelessness.
Now, did I hear you correct? Is that app only applicable? Is it for the full USA, or is
it's right now
being tested?
We tested it and it's working. It's working just fine in New Jersey, but it is scalable. So it's available for other communities to download and put their information in. There were three competitors that made the finals, and all three of them have very easy apps. I can even use them, so it's easy.
So that's the most recent collaboration between HUD and VA and the music industry.
We partner with everybody.
Well, I've enjoyed this conversation. I want to congratulate you both, because you and your efforts were awarded the Service to America Medal by the Partnership for Public Service for your work in reducing and ending veteran homelessness. Would you tell us more about the award, and more particularly, what does it mean to get recognition from your peers?
Well, I think that one of the most important things that came out of receiving this award, it really shows the American people that government agencies can work. And we can solve very, very difficult problems. We can work well together. It shows that we can share a goal. We have a common passion. We share the responsibility for achieving a very, very challenging mission. And I think that's something that the American people need to hear, mm-hmm. that we're using your money well. We're serving the veterans who served you. It's really hard, but working together, we're actually getting the job done.
Wonderful. Mark?
I guess I would say almost the same thing. The notion of teamwork. I mean, Susan and I worked together all the time. We had a great team of six that got that award, because there are various parts of our agencies that have to work together to make this whole thing work. And the other is really something that also Susan mentioned, and that is, it was just reaffirming to me that if we're focused in a very strategic, thoughtful way on a particular problem, that we can solve it. We actually see a reduction of that size in one particular year, that we really can solve any vexing social problem.
And I want to pick up on that, because I wonder if you guys can bottle your success in terms of shared leadership, because we at the center, and my interest in particular, is on leadership, in particular complex, wicked problems like what you're dealing with. I sort of joke, because a lot of the C-suiters have the whether it's the Chico Council, the CFO Council. What are you folks doing? This recognition, this award is a great way to get your efforts and success at collaborating and shared leadership out there. Are you doing anything else to say, hey, listen, this could happen. We can do this together on other problems. Is there any way of engaging your colleagues, your federal colleagues, in this way?
I think we do that frequently. We are invited to come and speak and talk about what we've been able to do and really the nuts and bolts, if you will, the recipe book that it takes to get this done to up-and-coming leaders. And that's very exciting. When you're talking to a group of 30 up-and-coming federal leaders, the notion of sharing a mission, sharing resources, sharing data is huge. You have to be willing to do that in a transparent way. You have to trust that the other organization has the same goodwill and has the same goal in front of them as you do. And we have that. But it takes time. Mm-hmm. It takes far more than meetings. Like we've said, we go out to communities as a leadership team together. We attend events together. We train these up-and-coming leaders together about what it takes. You have to look at your data. You have to be able to say, wow, you failed on that one. How can we help you do better? And we say that back and forth